This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're looking at factors that will shape our food world in 2019. We start with trend predictions and how media covers them.
A website could theoretically devote all their coverage to these viral trends and get all sorts of hits. That's not a way to build sustainable readerships, just as it's not a way to build, you know, sustainable restaurants.
We report on a big change coming and how street meat will be served.
On January 1st, a ban on plastic foam went into effect in New York City.
And we round out the episode with a story about using gene editing to create the spicy tomato of the future.
At first, it sounds like a gimmick or like something that you would do for fun. The truth is, there is a real value behind it.
It's not too late to make your resolution. Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode this year. Welcome to HR and Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Brooklyn. My name's Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director here at HRN, and I'm here with Katie Mosman-Wadler, our executive director.
Hey, Kat.
And Hannah Forden, our program manager.
Happy Thursday, Kat.
Happy Thursday to both of you. Yeah, welcome to Happy Hour.
We're here. We also have Amanda Wang in the booth. And a very, very special guest today. Kat, you want to introduce our guest?
I would love to. Our guest is a man who creates very, very delicious things to eat. His name is Art Pollard. He is the founder of Amano Chocolate. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on today.
Absolutely.
I got to have a sneak preview before the year end, and I see that you have brought a full-on library of chocolate here, which I'm very excited to talk about.
A veritable stack.
It is a stack. It's a colorful stack. I'm thinking library because it looks like these stacks.
It does look like beautiful books.
It does.
I'll take a shelf.
There you go.
Yeah. We're going to help you read that in a little bit. Yeah. First, we have just a couple of short announcements from Heritage Radio Network headquarters. The main thing that you may have noticed in our emails of late is that we just launched a Hall of Fame. So this is part of our 10th anniversary celebration. Basically, we're letting all of the shows who've been part of the network submit people who've been the top guests on the shows who have embodied HRN's philosophy and mission to improve equity, sustainability, and deliciousness in the food world. So every month we'll be adding to this Hall of Fame list. You can check it out at heritageradionetwork.org/Hall of Fame. Go figure. So we're going to jump into a couple of quick headlines, and then we will move on to our interview with Art. I guess I'm first on the headlines, too. Well, okay. On this week's Main Course OG, moderator Emily gives hard-hitting stories of food in the news to panelists, and they discuss their attitudes and opinions in the weekly-based segment. This is a very well-structured show now. You might remember from the early days of the Main Course, it was kind of rambling. But they've really kind of bucked up on the structure. So this week, they're talking about chocolate. Hey, we love chocolate. Also, some topics you might have seen in the New York Times: complaining at restaurants, spirit foods, and CBD. Also appearing on this week's Main Course is Nate Hodge. He's the co-founder and head chocolate maker at Rocka Chocolate.
There's a theme.
Yep. It's that kind of week. I guess it's February, too. So February is a chocolating month. Rocka is a nationally distributed bean-to-bar chocolate company based in Red Hook. And Nate also appears as a featured subject in the film Setting the Bar, which is a documentary that focuses on the leading role that Rocka has taken in the craft chocolate movement's focus on sustainable sourcing.
Next up, you probably know who Elon Musk is, but yes. Do you know Kimball Musk? Kimball is Elon's brother, and he's on this week's Farm Report with Lisa Held. He's the co-founder and executive chairman of three companies that approach food and agriculture from different angles. Lisa talks to him about his approach to local food systems, the role of technology in farming, and how indoor growing systems might impact the environment and food safety, and more.
And on the subject of urban farming, on this week's Tech Bites, it's all about vertical farms. Sitting down with host Jen Liuzzi is Mark Oshima. He is the founder and CMO of Aero Farms, which is a company that makes vertical farms. Jennifer and Mark talked about how AeroFarm's patented growing systems will optimize growth cycles and deliciousness for the future. Mark also discusses his work on the recently formed FDA Romaine Advisory Food Safety Task Force and the school farm inside the Felix Academy Charter School in Newark, New Jersey. And we're super excited. We're taking a field trip to AeroFarms in 2 weeks, so we'll definitely report back on that. They are in Newark, New Jersey. You never thought that would be a place for delicious greens.
I'll only go to Newark for greens.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, maybe pizza, maybe.
And if a flight, if I have to, but I try not to.
A fun fact also about Mark Oshima, he's a co-chair of Chefs Collaborative, which HRN's been a proud media partner of Chefs Collab now for quite a number of years. And they do really, really amazing work in the food space. You should definitely check them out, especially if you're a chef. They have amazing resources and a really incredible national network.
I'm fascinated by the Romaine Advisory Food Safety Task Force. Crazy that one specific lettuce needs a whole FDA force.
Well, it's been a problematic green recently on the food poisoning front, so perhaps it does need a little extra attention paid.
Luckily, our government's back open to start inspecting romaine again.
And all the other foods that they were just not inspecting anymore. So I guess something to be thankful for.
That's true. That's true. All right. Okay. Well, those were our headlines. It was a real roller coaster.
It's got its ups and downs. We didn't even talk about the State of the Union or anything.
Oh, gosh. I just can't.
Let's not.
It's fine. We're going to talk about chocolate.
From the Super Bowl to State of the Union, this week has just been like kind of the worst. And just so boring.
I mean, Kat's probably the most serious football fan.
Not anymore.
I know, but not now anymore. She's anti-football. I
just don't like it anymore.
She's given up on the sport. I can't. You know, I'm like from New England, so I have a pretty mixed bag of acquaintances like where they came down on the Super Bowl. I did try to watch it because my friends told me to, and they were not making the case for why one should watch football. I was like, what is happening? Nothing is happening.
It's always like there's someone watching it for football. There's someone watching it for commercials. And then there's someone watching it just because they're like, oh, I want to eat some good food.
And then there's someone who's just not watching it at all.
There's more of those. There will be more of those next year.
Uh-huh.
Because the game was bad. The commercials were really weird. Let's talk about the commercials for a second, though, because there are obviously a lot of beer commercials. And there was the one beer commercial where one of the big beer brands called out the others for using corn syrup in their beer. And not only was this a really weird stance for any of them to take and bring up, because it's like just, it's really just becoming then a commercial for craft breweries, but also it like pissed off the Corn Growers Association.
Ruffled some corn silks.
Yeah.
Good one. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about that for like 4 seconds before I said it.
That was
it. Really
very
hard
good.
On it. But no, the corn lobby is really upset.
They tweeted like 30 seconds later, we're disappointed in you.
Here's the thing. I think that the time has passed where defending corn syrup is a worthwhile activity, right?
They actually weren't trying to. They were like, we would like to tell you the benefits of corn. Like, they weren't really saying, like, corn syrup's great, but they were like, corn is the thing we should be eating more of. It's all very slimy.
Drinking more of.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that corn is not a traditional, well, some would argue with that, but corn is not one of the original beer grains.
It's used as a cheap replacement for malt.
It's just a carbon source at that point.
Yeah. Right. Or sugar.
Yeah. It could be used but yeah, pretty interesting. That also was weird. Some car commercials where I was like, what is this a commercial for? And at the end there would be a car and you're like, huh.
An interesting one was the Kia commercial. I thought that was very interesting because it was basically a commercial about a small community near Atlanta, but also near where I'm from, West Point, Georgia, where they're making Kias.
Yeah.
And it was basically just being... It was advertising the fact that people making Kias in rural Georgia are from a very poor area of the country, but still buy the car.
The voice, did you guys all see this ad? It was like a very depressed sounding child's voice narrating the commercial. And they're showing these like low color saturation images of poverty in Georgia. And it's like, it feels very like the overall tone was very depressing and strange. And it was like, you know, everybody said we would never amount to anything. Basically, and then they're like, here's Kia.
We all work at this factory, which is a major, huge factory right off the interstate. Mm-hmm. Anytime I fly into Atlanta and drive home to Alabama, I pass this massive factory. I mean, it's on one hand, like, great to be bringing jobs to the area, but the fact the weirdness was like using that as your advertising pitch.
It was like almost they were exploiting the poverty to advertise the car, which is supposed to be alleviating the poverty, but it was really really meta.
The other big theme was like commercials where like it was about like robots are coming for you, but they're not human, so they can't enjoy the thing we're trying to sell you.
Right.
That was the theme.
Sad robot uprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
maybe next year they'll have a robot instead of Adam Levine. That would probably be for the best.
That would probably be at least as exciting.
More.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's our rant.
That's fine. We are going to have a better week next week.
But how can we feel better now? I know.
I have an idea.
Chocolate. Okay.
So I want to give a better introduction to Art Pollard. Art is the founder of Amano Chocolate, a bean-to-bar chocolate manufacturer based out of Orem, Utah. Did I say that right?
It is right.
Yes. He makes small-batch chocolate bars, and his chocolate has won countless awards, such as the gold medal at the International Chocolate Awards and gold at the London Academy of Chocolate.
Plus, a rave review by Massimo Bottura on you heard another it here than first. Heritage Radio Network.
Yes. So, let's start there, Art. So, tell us the story of how Massimo came to rave about your chocolate in Denver last year.
Well, so we had a great opportunity to exhibit at the Slow Food event. And I thought, you know, I've always been a great fan of Heritage Radio Network. And so I saw your booth. I thought, hey, we really got to do something together. So I grabbed a whole handful of bars. I came over and talked to somebody. I said, like, you got to try these bars. This is what we do. But, like, don't believe what I say. Like, taste what we do. And then you'll see that, like, we're the real deal. And then I didn't think much of it. And then a little bit later, little side note, I see somebody coming around the corner. And I think, wow, that looks like my friend Doug Taylor. And Doug's a really well-known pastry chef in Las Vegas. And he cooked for, you know, some of the top restaurants there. And I was like, wow, that looks just like him. I got to take a picture of this dude because he looks just like him. He's got this doppelganger. And comes a little closer. No, it is Doug Taylor. And turns out he'd flown in just specifically so he could meet Massimo.
Wow.
And then a few minutes later, everybody starts coming over to our booth and saying, you know, you've just got the most amazing endorsement in the entire universe.
And that endorsement was that the chocolate that you had brought by ended up, I don't remember how exactly it ended up in Massimo's hand, but I was interviewing Massimo Bottura.
He stopped the interview.
I think he was like hungry. I think he was genuinely hungry. And we were like, all we have at our booth is, because we didn't have really food around us. And we were like, here's some chocolate. Halfway through the interview, he's like, stop talking to me. And where's more chocolate? And so we had to keep like feeding him chocolate throughout the interview, which was a real godsend because I think he would have just, you know, I don't know, gone haywire without food, but he loved it. And everyone that was around then perked up and was like, let me find where this chocolate is located. And and then it was recorded for anyone and everyone to listen to. Uh-huh.
And he's like, this chocolate has like, I've got a clean palate and I get like all these amazing flavors. And wow, this is like an amazingly high quality chocolate.
And that's awesome.
And I'm like, it doesn't get any better than that.
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're going to have to really, there's not many people to strive for an endorsement past Massimo.
Especially unasked.
Exactly.
Well, and you saved our interview because it sounds like, you know, he kind of would have gone off the rails if we hadn't given him some
sugar. He was wound up that day. It was really, really fun. And
it was like 90 million degrees out too. And I think he had probably done like 7 other interviews and a demo. So yeah, I think the chocolate was a godsend for all of us really because we were melting.
And let me say though that selling chocolate at our booth when it's 90 plus degrees.
Mm-hmm. What did you do? How did you keep it from melting?
It melted.
Chocolate sauce.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Luckily, the next day was a little cooler, but no, it melted.
So, Art, tell us about kind of the genesis story of Amano.
Wow. I grew up in a little town Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is where the National Lab is. So I grew up with a really strong technical background. But, you know, New Mexico is great because you have the fusion of, like, Native American cuisine, Hispanic cuisine, and Anglo. And anytime we have, like, different cultures coming together, you get really awesome food. That's why you find awesome food in, like, port cities. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up being, like, this huge foodie, even though I really didn't know that at the time. Mm-hmm. And but I was always looking for, like, the ultimate in food. And skip forward a bunch of years. I was working at my university in the physics department while I was a student. And I just said, I was eating this German chocolate bar, and I said, you know, it'd be really cool to make my own chocolate. Mm-hmm. And all my coworkers who are working on nuclear projects and space shuttle getaway projects and so forth, particle accelerators, they're like, no, you can't do it. It's too hard.
How did they know?
Apparently they knew more than I did. And I, well, why is it too hard? And they said, well, you need millions of dollars of machinery. And the funny thing is I'd actually started working, not as a paid thing, but for the university, just volunteering since I was like 12, using their machine shop, helping them build stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you need millions of dollars of machinery. And I'm thinking, I can do that.
Uh-huh.
I can
no
build
problem.
It. Yeah, I'll just build it.
I got it.
And then they say, there's all these like trade secrets. And I'm like, oh, cool. Research project.
Reverse engineering.
Yeah. I can figure this out.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, and you need really good quality cocoa beans, and those are hard to get. And I said, cocoa beans? So that's what you use?
Like travel. You can just,
Yeah. And then I'm thinking, I'm like, where do you get good quality cocoa beans? They're like, well, Central and South America. And I'm like,
sounds like a great place to visit.
That's
like,
basically where we are right now. Yeah.
I'm like, screw it. I'll go get my own, you know?
So any obstacle immediately to you became a perk.
Oh, absolutely. It made it all the more attractive.
Wow.
So can you tell us about maybe some of the interim tinkering that you did in between? So being 12-year-old art, starting off in the machine shop, what were your projects before the chocolate machinery came along?
Oh, I was doing stuff like building Tesla coils.
Wow.
And Jacob's ladders. And I had a really nice lab that I'd set up in our basement, you know, complete with like full lab grade equipment, because I could buy like, you know, thousands of dollars worth of equipment, like oscilloscopes from the Los Alamos National Laboratory, you know, when they were like phasing stuff out. So I had better equipment than most people that were, you know, far older than I was.
Did you have like full support from your family on these projects?
Sometimes they really insisted they be around so I wouldn't burn the house down.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah, but it kind of cramps your style. So there's a lot of experimenting that happened when my parents weren't home.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew that like if they were home that, you know, it probably wouldn't happen.
This really makes me think that it's either A, like the Jimmy Neutron cartoon, or like B, Dexter's Lab, where it's like the kid in the garage that has like a secret laboratory.
Yeah.
Was that kind of the vibe?
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool.
And like the great thing about Los Alamos is like every kid down there at the time, that's how it was, you know?
Wow.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's like a great place to grow up because like at the time, 65% of the population had a PhD.
Wow.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Is that the highest saturation of education it's anywhere?
Highest educated county in the country.
Yeah.
Wow. Still, currently.
I don't know about now, but then it was. And so they had like in the high school, I did high school up in Seattle, but in the high school they had Russian, taught by a Russian defector. And they still were teaching classical Greek and classical Latin.
I just finished The Americans and that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to be taught Russian by a defector.
Yeah.
Okay, so you say no problem to any of these obstacles about making chocolate. How do you get started?
So a couple years later, I got married and I went out to Hawaii for our honeymoon. And I'd spent a little bit of time living out there, which is great because I got the whole wedding and reception and place to stay made with like one phone call.
Nice.
My friends were like, I'll take care of it. You're good. And then my wife and I went into the Hilton Hawaiian Village, and there was a Belgian confectionery company there. They only had two outlets in the country. We go in there and all the pieces looked like gems. You know, you see a lot more of that sort of thing now, but back then it was, you know, everything was like hand dipped in nut clusters and that sort of thing. And I was just like blown away by how gorgeous it was. And I tried to get them to, I'm like, how much are they? And they're like $2 a piece. And I had $500 for my wife and I to last to the end of the week. And so that's, and you know, everything once you get married is like twice as expensive. So the $2 piece is
funny
like
how that works.
$4. Like, yeah. So, so then I tried to get her to come down on price. Do you have anything that's like about ready to expire? And she says, no, everything that expires, we have to send back to Belgium. I'm like, wow, like they're serious. This is not like play chocolate. This is the real deal. And so, so I got one for me and one for my wife. And then as soon as we tasted it, it's like a whole new level, right? So as soon as I got back, I called my old boss and gave him some ideas, some different machines to keep an eye open for. And he started bringing stuff over. And then I started designing and building my own machinery. And then I started a software company doing search engine development. So we'd actually write the code that does the searching. And we'd have like machines in the other room making chocolate. And while we were like writing code and working out really big deals with really big companies.
Was this like an alternative to like, there's sort of the stereotype, you know, this beverage called Soylent that is like supposed to be for this busy engineer type who doesn't have time to think about food or eating. But like, I'm thinking, okay, like cacao that is being processed at various stages would make a much better meal replacement for a bunch of software engineers who are working away. Were you guys like hyped out all the time from
well, there too much that, chocolate but,
and like but you, theobromine overload?
There's that, but you actually get to this point where, you know, you can't, you know, chocolate tends to self-limit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'd eat an amazing amount of chocolate, but after a while, you know, you're giving it out to your friends and your neighbors. And it wasn't long before, like, Steve Rosenberg that runs Liberty Heights Fresh up in Salt Lake, he's like, you know, this is like one of the best chocolates I've ever tasted. And I'm thinking, maybe we should take this a little bit further.
So you were in New Mexico and you went to school in Seattle a little bit, but yeah. How did you end up in Utah?
Oh, I was chasing a certain female. And then after I moved to Utah, then she moved away about 2 weeks later. So,
but what made you stay then?
School. I signed up for school at BYU and then, you know, I set up my own, you know, my software company. And, you know, after you own your own business, you really don't want to move because, like, then you have to set up a whole new network, right? Mm-hmm.
So the machines that you talked about setting up, what actually do the machines do in the chocolate making process?
So so I'd roast the beans, just starting off by hand, just in the oven. And then, you know, for a while, I just sat there and hand peeled them. So nothing like worse than getting blisters on your thumbs. And so then, the machines I designed and built would do the refining and the conching, which would be like grinding up the beans and then, more or less aerating. That's what conching is, stirring and aerating the chocolate until you achieve the flavors that you want. But I think it was like through that development of the machinery and it allowed me to do like real serious experimentation as to like what develops flavor and how do you achieve certain flavor profiles. Because like if you bought a machine and you put your stuff in, you turn it on, well, then it all works, which is great, but you never have that learning process. Mm-hmm. And so by having your failures, what you learn is the whys. And that's where we learned our whys. And so we're able to use those whys as to, you know, achieve some pretty amazing flavor in our chocolate.
Can we talk about the flavor line? Because you have, every time I see you, you have more flavors with you. I see, how many is that? Like 10 different looking boxes right now. Talk about your line and how you've created some of these kind of like really serious culinary chocolates.
Wow. We try to have a relationship with all the farmers that we get our cocoa from. So there's a lot of travel involved. And there's a lot of, Most of the world's cocoa is actually not very good quality. And so there's a lot of sorting that has to be done to, you know, find these farmers that really know what they're doing and have pride. You know, it's about having heart. And it's not something that you can necessarily explain to somebody, but you know it when you see it. And some of the farmers that we work with are, you know, up to 8-generation cocoa farmers. And I remember I was in Venezuela, and there was this old farmer, he's probably 70, and he says, you know, I don't care what they pay me for my cocoa. I'll always grow cocoa. I said, well, why? Don't you care? He says, well, you know, I'll survive, but I love my trees. So I don't care what they pay. I love my trees. I'll always grow cocoa. And I find that really amazing. It's something that you see with the cocoa farmers is there's this connection to their trees that you just don't see. Like, you never hear anybody say, you know, I'm always going to grow pineapple. I love my pineapple, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's the lifetime of a cacao tree?
I've heard of trees being several hundred years old.
Wow.
It doesn't happen very often, and I've heard of them growing immense, you know, like 3 feet in diameter, but I've never seen them like that, but I know people who have. But generally, they actually grow fairly quickly. From the time you plant the bean, interestingly, the bean actually starts germinating from the moment it comes off the tree. Hmm. And you plant the bean, and then it will... It'll take about 3 years before you start getting a little bit of production and 5 years to your first harvest.
That's pretty quick.
It is pretty quick.
Yeah.
Do you think it's getting easier or harder to source great cocoa?
It's getting easier because of the transportation situation. But it's also something that we're losing because with the transportation and modern communication, then the kids in a lot of these areas, they don't want to stay out on the farm. And so they're moving to the cities, and maybe they're educated, maybe they're not. But, you know, there's plenty of labor work, you know, like working in oil fields or what have you, where they can get paid more and on some levels do less work. So, you know, it's something that's going to be a problem unless we're used to paying, you know, for a higher quality product.
Well, why don't we take a really quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll taste some of the treats that Art brought. And then after we taste, we'll play a little bit of trivia.
There we go.
Awesome. That works. We'll be right back.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
All right, welcome back to HRN Happy Hour. We're here with Art Pollard from Amano Chocolate. And right now, we alluded to the fact that he brought a whole stack of chocolate bars along with some other things in bags. Art, can you tell us what you brought in the bags?
The bags have cocoa beans.
The raw ingredient.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get them in 70-kilo bags, and then we sort through them because it's coming right from the farm, and you find all sorts of interesting things that sometimes shouldn't be there. And
like what?
Well,
some extra protein.
Oftentimes it's coffee or other kinds of grains or rocks. We get a lot of rocks, which needless to say, are not good for our machines. They don't like rocks.
No, you want to get those out of there.
And this miscellaneous stuff. It was interesting. I was at a chocolate factory in Europe that does like amazing amounts of chocolate. And I asked them once, I said, so do you ever find anything interesting? And this place is so big, they have truck tilters. So the whole semi comes in, and they just open up the back doors, and they tilt the truck, and everything comes, you know, screaming out. And they say, yeah, we found something. We found this, like, giant spider. And I'm like, everybody's, like, horrified because they found a spider. Ugh. But for me, I'm thinking, so you're doing, like, this much business, and the only thing you found is a spider?
What does that tell you about that?
How many rocks have I eaten?
There's that, and there's, like, how much stuff have they not found?
Right. I'm like, well, I was expecting you to say, like, a full-size tree or, like, a person or, like, something really noticeable. But
yeah, there's stories that a certain chocolate maker once found a pistol in their bag.
See, that's exciting.
That seems very plausible.
Yeah.
Like,
very plausible.
But it's one that I hope that they lost, because that means it would have been imported illegally. And
right.
You know, and there's,
you just,
like,
never know.
There's this little agency called the ATF that they don't have a sense of humor.
Oh, no. No. You also have a pod.
I do have a pod.
And tell us about that. Like, kind of explain the structure of the pod and the beans.
This pod is actually contraband.
Ooh.
Because I smuggled it back from...
Amanda, censor this later.
The plot thickens.
Yes. I smuggled it back from the Dominican Republic. and it came from a plantation that's where we get our cocoa that we call... chocolate we call Macaris, and it's kind of top secret which plantation it kind of comes from. But maybe we could try.
Let's try.
Yeah.
Okay. As we're tasting, I have a question because.
By the way, see the wrapper.
Oh yeah, perfect.
Ooh, good sound effect.
It's really here.
So, is each bar geographically specific?
Yes.
So, I want to hear about chocolate terroir.
Oh. Now, one of the interesting things, is
we can eat while we talk about it.
Yeah. Is that your cocoa literally changes flavor from location to location. And some of that's because of variety, but some of that's because of soil conditions. Mm-hmm. But at least if it's good quality cocoa, after it's harvested, it needs to be fermented and dried. And you actually end up with flavor variations caused by the natural genetic variations in the yeast and bacteria that's involved in the fermenting process.
Wait, I didn't know that chocolate needed to be fermented.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Now, your big companies like Hershey's and Mars and so forth, they kind of like skip that step. Mm-hmm. And the beans, when they come off the tree, they're like really bitter and tannic. And so the fermenting process, you know, tempers all that and takes it from something that's, you know, very nasty and you want to spit out, which is what the tree wants you to do, to something that's actually very delicious and beautiful. Mm. But the big companies, they skip the step, and so the only way to get rid of those flavors is to, like, over roast it, and in which case that's why some chocolate tastes like coffee, is because it's a little bit like coffee.
Mm-hmm. Do you are with a lot of people tasting your chocolate.
Yeah.
Do you have tasting guidelines or methodology for tasting the chocolate?
You know, some people have these huge processes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this chewed, don't chew, smell it first, rub it between your fingers, smell it to warm it up. I think that's all well and good. But you know what? Fundamentally, it's all about enjoyment. It's about love.
That's why you make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my only thing is, like, just don't eat it too fast, because you know, once it's in your stomach, you can't taste it anymore.
So sad.
Good point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so
no
just,
taste buds in there.
Just eat it slowly and just savor it and whatever makes you happy, right?
Yeah. Well, this is making me very happy right now.
Yeah. Isn't that special?
I get like a molassesy.
Yeah.
Flavor in that.
Yeah, just a little bit of apricot maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very creamy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
the way that it melts is really nice. It's like, it feels like it kind of, maybe it's also a perfect temperature in this room, but it kind of stayed cold in the middle, but it melts like so smoothly.
Yeah. We spent 7 years negotiating for those beans.
Wow.
Whoa.
And so the farmers knew they had something special and they didn't really want to sell it to anybody.
Wow.
And then I did a trip out there once and they took pity on me and they sold me this cocoa after many years of asking.
What were they doing with it before?
They had their own internal outlet for it. Mm-hmm. Or they'd take it and they'd mix it in with their other cocoa.
Okay.
And sell it not segregated.
Mm.
But you know, like I say, they knew they had something special and they wanted it, if it went anywhere, to be turned into something special.
What was it that made these beans so specific? Is it like the age of the tree or just the
it's one of those things is that it's never any one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's, you know, soil conditions, you know, variety of trees, you know, the fermentation process, and every place is a little bit different. But every once in a while, you find a place where everything comes together and it's all just magical. And when you taste it, then you know. And it's not a thing that you can really describe. It's like it's a gut feeling, mm-hmm. you know, and when it, you know, it touches your soul. Yeah.
What else is in that chocolate bar besides the beans?
We have sugar. Good old CNH, pure cane sugar, not from Hawaii, because there's no more sugar plantations in Hawaii.
As of like a couple years ago, right?
Yeah. Well, on Oahu, they stopped in 1995.
Wow.
A friend of mine, Mike Conway, who used to be the field manager for Dole there. And he's a great guy. And then for a while, there's a sugar operation out in Maui, and they just shut down a couple years ago. Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah, really is. And then what else besides sugar?
Cocoa butter, which is the fat that naturally is in the beans, same way that peanut oil comes from peanuts. And then just a little bit of vanilla. And vanilla is a flavor enhancer, just in the same way that, like, you know, salt is on a steak. Helps bring out the flavors that are just naturally present. Of course, the larger companies, they, like, dump vanilla in because they use really icky cocoa beans.
Are they still using real vanilla?
A lot of the big ones don't.
Yeah.
Which really makes me angry, actually, because it really doesn't take that much vanilla. You know, for like a big batch for us, which is like a ton, like a literal ton.
an actual ton.
Yeah. So when we say we have tons of chocolate at the factory, we have tons of chocolate. But it really doesn't take that many vanilla beans. Uh-huh. And so when I look at, like, the overall cost to make a batch of chocolate versus the cost of the vanilla beans to, like, you know, add vanilla to the chocolate, I'm just like, why are these big companies, like, using vanilla and you know, artificial mm-hmm. Vanilla
that stuff for
replacements?
Beers.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're at that point, you're arguing, like, you know, pennies per, you know, 100 pounds sort of thing, you know.
Huh. And you have like a number of flavored chocolates too.
Yeah, we have a couple.
So can you talk through the sort of how many of your bars are single origin, more focused on like purely the chocolate, and then how many are, what are some of the flavors?
We only have three flavored bars currently. Mm-hmm. I've got like a number that are in development, but.
Are you taking requests?
We absolutely are.
Okay.
We can.
Noted.
We can talk about that after the show, so that way we don't give a
trade secret
heads up.
I know. Okay.
But
so go. You have three flavors.
Yeah, we have three flavors. We have a mango chili, and we have a raspberry rose, and we have a cardamom black pepper. Mm. And the cardamom black pepper is actually a flavor combination I came up with like long before we ever started Amano, and I was making like chocolate in the kitchen and driving my wife like really crazy because I was a total mess.
I was like, wait, this doesn't seem like a problem if you're like making lots of chocolate.
Yeah.
I guess it was the way.
Yes. You were making it. Well, my wife's Japanese, so like cleaning, it's like a genetic thing, I think. And so, like, you know, you've seen like these hoarder TV shows.
Uh huh.
Those are like copies of Japanese shows.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, there's Marie Kondo.
Great, yes. Japanese TV shows.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, cleaning is, like, a very Japanese thing, and my wife, like, epitomizes that. Mm. So when I make a mess in the kitchen, which I do frequently, then, well, it's not appreciated.
I see.
I can't imagine. should we try one more, and then we'll hop on trivia?
Let's try our Dos Rios, which actually comes from more or less the same area, but we're talking about the fermentation of the cocoa. Mm-hmm. This is fermented differently. We actually have an exclusive on these beans.
Oh, cool.
And what you'll notice is that they're super floral. Tastes like bergamot orange and lavender. And maybe a little bit of blueberry. And that's just like naturally present in the beans themselves.
It smells like blueberry.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually the favorite chocolate at a little restaurant just outside of London called the Fat Duck. Mm-hmm. And so they've used it there for a number of, like, you know, special events. And so we would find ways to get it to them, even though we have, like, no distribution in the UK yet. But
that's amazing.
Really good. Do you make any chocolates for savory uses that, like, don't have sugar or much sugar?
Not exactly. I mean, all our chocolates are all 70%. Mm-hmm. Usually what you can do, that if it's 70%, that's the amount of cocoa that comes from the bean, which also means that that's 30% sugar. So if you look at your recipe, you can just, if there is sugar in your recipe, you can just reduce it by that amount. Mm-hmm. And then everything comes out just hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm. So have you done, like, savory cooking with chocolate or cacao? Or
oh,
cocoa?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
This little things
where
like...
Where has that gone?
Moles. Mm-hmm. And of course, a little bit of chocolate in your chili mm-hmm. goes a long ways. Just a hint. If you add too much, it doesn't really work. But if you add just a hint, it adds a whole level of flavor complexity that... By the way, I'm opening cocoa beans. You hear that? Another sound effect.
Uh-huh. We're going to bank that one.
Yeah.
I just had a question about the savory element. It just went out of my head.
I'm just fascinated by that. I worked for a restaurant group at one point that would do some savory chocolate, or basically a whole chocolate dinner where it was coursed. And only the last course of like five would have a sweet component, but every course had chocolate in it somehow.
Yeah, and in most of the cocoa growing countries, that's how chocolate is seen, as a savory.
Right.
As in Chihuahua, Venezuela, where they have literally like cocoa that's legendary. Mm-hmm. And they brought out this, it's basically a stewed meat dish with a chocolate sauce over it. It's absolutely amazingly phenomenal.
I remembered my question. My mind was momentarily erased by the Dos Rios chocolate, which was
it does
really
have a habit
phenomenal
of doing
experience.
That.
My question was kind of on your scientific and tinkering side. The fruit of the cacao tree is notoriously quick to spoil, and like you said, it starts germinating as soon as it comes off the tree. So, yeah. Cacao fruit fresh is not a thing that most people in the U.S. have been able to experience. Does your tinkering side ever think about like ways of maybe creating a little bit of shelf life of cacao fruit product?
Yes.
Because I want you to do that. I don't know if that came through in my question.
I got this vibe thing, and I was kind of noticing that that's where you're going. Uh-huh. It's actually something that we're working on.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Hopefully it's something we can get to come together. But if not, I have a whole enjoyable time doing some experimenting along the way.
Okay. I want to be in the loop about that.
Okay.
Also, my next perishable fruit request is cashew fruit. So if it could probably use some similar technology. Yeah. I'm just going to send you a whole list.
Consider this your assignment.
I'm sensing
your homework for next visit to HRN is helping us get some exotic fruits.
You know, this is a little scary because I'm sensing some challenges.
Well, I
and
heard
that's
that those
how
don't
this whole
deter
chocolate
you.
Thing
that in fact,
started. Are you up to it? Yeah.
You might have a whole nother life unfolding.
So I just peeled some beans of our Dos Rios.
Oh, cool.
And so what's going to be really awesome is you can actually taste the Dos Rios beans. And I've actually had this other dude, whose name shall go unmentioned, that actually accused us of like putting flavoring in the beans.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. How and why would you do that?
I wouldn't do that. And but as you taste these beans, you know, you can see that like the beans taste pretty much like the chocolate.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They're fruity.
A tiny bit like smokier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was actually, we had to develop a whole new set of processes in order to be able to keep those flavors there, because that whole floral component is something that's like very, it evaporates very easily. Mm-hmm. And so,
volatile.
Yeah, it's very volatile. Mm-hmm. So we had to develop a whole set of new processes in order to be able to process it without losing those things that really make it special.
Cool.
Well, Art, before we move on to trivia,
yeah,
which as you may have guessed is chocolate themed trivia, where can people learn more about Amano chocolate?
At this little website, www.amano.com.
Or listen to, go to HRN on tour and search for Massimo Bottura and hear him talk about Amano.
Absolutely.
In case we haven't convinced you yet, yeah, let the best chef in the world
hear me try to get through an interview with Massimo when he's distracted by how good the chocolate is.
Yes.
Okay. So yes, our trivia is about chocolate, but not about chocolate itself, but about how chocolate appears in pop culture.
Okay.
So, first question. And you can get some help from the rest of the team.
Yeah, none of us have seen the
They haven't seen the answers.
Okay.
Question number one. In the 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, what's the name of the German boy who falls into a pool of liquid chocolate?
Wasn't it Augustus?
Yes.
Gloop?
Augustus Gloop.
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
Our ding, ding, ding's broken. Amanda told me so. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, that's the... Yeah, I came in and she was like, you're going to have to do it manually.
I was talking to the wall. Okay, we'll do it manually. And that's what I was referring to.
Oh.
It's our buzzer.
Yep. Everyone was like confused. I was talking to myself. All right, question number two. Speaking of Willy Wonka, who wrote the book the movie's based on?
Roald Dahl.
That's right. Ding, ding, ding.
You're good at that, Kat.
One of my favorite... I devoured like every Roald Dahl book as a kid.
Me too.
Just the best. All right, question number three. In one episode of Seinfeld, Jerry and Kramer observe an operation. Kramer happens to bring with him a box of chocolate candies to the viewing. In the climax of the episode, he drops one of the candies into the operating table where it ends up being sewn up inside the patient. Can you tell me what candy that was?
You know what?
We're trying to do phone a friend, but I think the friends are also not sure.
When you spend as much time like doing the laboratory thing as I do, I missed a lot of Seinfeld episodes, as awesome as they were.
I also haven't seen much Seinfeld.
I have, but I don't remember. I saw a lot of it as a very small child.
I'll give you a hint.
Can you give us a hint about like the melting point? Like,
I'll give you a hint about the chocolate. It's a candy that has chocolate, a very thin chocolate exterior, and the middle is a white color.
Oh, it's Junior Mints.
That's it.
Oh, there
ding,
we go.
Ding, ding.
It's hard to do the ding, ding, ding. It feels weird.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you. All right, question number four. Harry Potter is introduced to the chocolate treats of the Wizarding World when he opens up a package containing this chocolate candy. It's a little hard to eat, though, because it's a piece of chocolate that looks and acts like what animal?
Do we get a phone a friend with Serena? No. No, I think I know. I know. Wait. Do you know it? It's a frog.
It's a frog.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
They hop
away. You have to eat them quickly.
Squirrely.
Yeah, now that you say that, now I kind of actually remember
Have you seen or read any Harry Potter?
I have watched the movies with my kids, but I have not read any.
The books are great.
Can you believe that those are as old as they are? Are they 10 years or more than 10 years?
They've got to be more than that.
I think they might be 20 years old or like something crazy. Like,
yeah.
To me, they seem more recent than that.
Yeah, I was always a Tolkien guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? And then I'd like start missing the characters, so I'd have to like read it all over again because like I missed Frodo.
Well, small tangent, they have a huge Tolkien exhibition at the Morgan Library right now.
Oh, cool.
So if you have extra time, you should check it out. It's all like Tolkien's original art, like hand-painted.
Oh. I have a friend of mine, and she was like one of his students in college.
Wow.
And she said he was the most boring teacher that she ever had.
Not surprised.
He put all his creativity into the books.
Well, absolutely.
He didn't have any more
left. I mean, like, I'm sure that he did the whole thing so that way he could invent languages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, fascinating. Like, you know.
All right.
To be inside of that brain.
This is the last question. This is the one that I wrote. Kevin wrote the rest. This is me. You might be able to tell. The British pop rock band, The 1975, has a well-known song called Chocolate. The song is actually about fleeing the police in a boring small town. In the song, chocolate is a euphemism. For what?
This certainly isn't Alice's restaurant.
This is our stumped face.
What would you be? What would you have on you that you need to? You would need to flee the police for.
Is it like? Well, a lot of like so many things, Kat.
It's small towns. Cops are bored.
That you need to flee the police. Like the police are pursuing you because of your possession of this thing.
Yeah. It's a drug.
Is it? Oh, it's. I was gonna say, is it drugs?
It's a drug.
It's a drug.
It's a certain drug.
Hash.
I'll give it to you.
Wait, okay.
Weed, like cannabis, whatever.
Okay.
Ding, ding.
Yeah.
Ding,
ding. Well done, Art.
I never knew that song was about that. I thought it was about chocolate.
What are the clues in the song?
Well, they're British, so they're singing about like having guns under their petticoats, and then like things smell like chocolate. Like their hair smells like chocolate, and the car smells like chocolate. And really, what they're saying is the car smells like weed.
Do you want to know what weed doesn't smell like?
Chocolate.
Chocolate.
Agree. Hard agree.
This is like a weird twist on Super Troopers or something. Like,
we tried to watch Super Troopers the other day, and
one or two.
I did not get it.
But you do. I mean, I went to college in Vermont, so Super Troopers is like too real.
I could see that.
But I have not seen Super Troopers 2 yet. Yet.
It was a weird vibe.
I'm sure it's going to be just a stellar piece of cinema.
The first one definitely is.
Well, okay. That was probably the most delicious happy hour ever.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think so. I feel like I'm still getting the wonderful blueberry from Dos Rios.
I might have some more.
I have to ask, though. Was Massimo right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Okay. About everything, but especially about the chocolate.
Okay.
When in doubt, we agree with Massimo.
Okay.
But not in doubt on this.
Yeah, this is a lot of certainty and...
very delicious.
I think that our judgments will align favorably. Also, we'll hopefully like be able to do a reunion at Slow Food Denver.
Oh, absolutely!
Will you be there?
I'll be there.
Yeah,
we'll be there.
So we will hope for slightly cooler temperatures, but also
this time we'll interview you, and Massimo has to bring you food.
Oh, we could do that.
It's only fair.
You down? Yes.
I'm down.
I don't know if Massimo is going to be there again, but
we should.
We'll have him
out.
Send something.
We can. Yeah. See what we can do to get somebody to arrange that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe he can like ship something to mm-hmm. the worst case scenario. But I think it's only fair that we turn the tables and that he give you something to critique on air.
Yeah.
And you know where you can find that interview with Massimo is on the Hall of Fame page.
That's true.
Right. Yeah. Massimo is in our January inductees. So if you go to heritageradionetwork.org/Hall of Fame, go to Massimo Bottura, you can hear all about Art's chocolate there as well.
Yes. Thank you, Art.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the treats.
Chatting and bringing the most delicious chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And while we're ending things, we all just pass this one more thing around.
All right.
Our raspberry twist rose. Arm.
Oh, yeah. This is dessert.
It's based on Pierre Hermé's cake called Intense.
Ooh.
Which I swore the first time I ever ate one.
If someone was going to pick out one of your chocolates to have on Valentine's Day, which I know is cliche, don't hate me for asking this question. But what would be the best Valentine's Day chocolate?
The raspberry rose.
The one we're having right now.
Mm. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll test it out. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
with
our
that,
show. We're going to end on the most peaceful note we ever had. I'm talking with my mouth full of chocolate. Art
it's
Blard,
delicious.
Thank you for being our guest today.
Absolutely.
On Intern Happy Hour.
This has been fun.
Mm. So good. Guys, we need to eat chocolate. We'll see you next Thursday.
Yeah.
That's our show.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Kat.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you, Art.
Thanks for being awesome.
And Serena, who has been hiding here the whole time. But we're going to call you out anyway.
Our silent guest.
All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.